that very, very much. And it wasn't your fault that I didn't graduate from East Tennessee. No, didn't even try. Wouldn't have bothered me if I had, but I didn't. I've got kind of an advantage over most of the speakers in this lectureship. And that is, sometimes when you have a lectureship like this and you submit your manuscripts and everybody buys a copy of it, they sit and read your lecture while you're presenting it. You can't do that with mine. Because if you read the one that's in there with my name on it, it's the wrong lecture. Several weeks ago, I found out, I normally am in India this time of the year. I've made a few mission trips to India. Normally, when the lectureship is being held here, I'm in India, but I decided not to go this year, and I called Emmanuel and told him I'd be in town. If I could help anyway with the lectureship, to let me know. And he said, well, you can. We just had someone cancel, and we'd like for you to take their topic. So he gave me my topic. He said, now, I need you to get your manuscript in soon, because we're trying to put this book together. So I hustled around and got a short manuscript together and submitted it. And last week, I was getting ready to leave for a gospel meeting, and I got my copy of West Virginia Christian and got to looking at the lectureship, and lo and behold, the topic that I was assigned was not the topic Emmanuel had given me. So the topic in the book says God's or discipline in the home. I think Jim Farley's going to speak on that later, but that's not my topic. Now, after I found out that I was on at 1 and Jim was on at 3, I started to go ahead and speak on that anyway and let Jim worry about what to say when he got up at 3. I thought, you know, it can be his problem, not mine. But I have a different topic, and mine is godly worship in the home. And I want to begin with a quote that I read recently that to me has a great deal to say about the conditions of many of the homes that we find today, unfortunately, even some that are Christian homes. The author said, most saints in this generation appear more zealous that their children should shine on earth than in heaven, and that they may be rich here at the hazard of eternal bankruptcy. They labor to make them rich and genteel rather than pure and holy, and spend more time in fashioning them to the foolish and wicked taste of polished society than in teaching them by precept and example the word that is more precious than gold and more precious than rubies. The same author contended that family education and domestic, that would be a religion at home, must be, and listen to what he says, I need not say greatly enhanced, but begun. Family education and domestic religion doesn't need to be enhanced. He says it needs to be begun. This author called for a thorough reformation in family religion and family education, charging that while many families practice forms of family religion, so often that religion ignores the real substance of Christianity, and parents tend to neglect the command to nurture their children in the care of Jesus Christ. He also observed that on every hand you can encounter nominal Christian parents with almost pagan families. The author felt that many contemporaries, church members and ministers included, were consumed with money-loving and money-seeking, that they were more preoccupied with the question of the upward mobility of their families. And he said most parents were giving considerable more attention to equipping their children for the best circles on earth rather than heavenly circles. Now, I found these statements interesting because in just observation, it seemed to me to be a pretty fair evaluation of what we are seeing in many homes today, certainly those outside of Christ, but unfortunately, too many inside of Christ. But what really fascinated me about this statement was the fact that they were made by Alexander Campbell somewhere around the year 1837. I wonder what he'd say today if he looked at the way some of the homes in America are moving. It's from a little book entitled A Well-Ordered Home, and I think it's just collections of articles and writings by Alexander Campbell, and it's from a chapter entitled The Family as School. Now, Campbell in his book did more than complain that too many parents were doing too little in instructing their children at home. He urged parents to begin at the nursery and to commit themselves to the demanding but not the impossible task of educating their children. In language that Campbell was fond of, he declared, while the metal is warm, cast it in the mold. While the plant is young and tender, give it proper direction. When the child is young, teach it manners and customs which adorn man. He stated, we must begin with the first indications of thought, We must plant the fear of God, His greatness, goodness, holiness, His omnipresence, justice, truth, and faithfulness, as well as His mercy and compassion in the untrodden soil of the infant heart, as soon as we can reach it by the word or deed, by precept or example. And did you hear what he said? With the first indications of thought, in that untrodden soil of the infant heart, begin implanting not only the goodness and the holiness and the mercy and the compassion of God, but also a knowledge of His omnipresence, His justice, and His truth. Just this morning, we heard a statement made that maybe one of the reasons we're having a lot of problems with worship and some of the other things is that some of these concepts aren't really being taught, not only at home, but in our public assemblies as well. You see, do our children understand that there's an all-seeing eye? Do they understand the omnipresence of God? That there's nothing that is not laid open before the eyes of Him with whom we have to do? Sure, we teach our children lessons on the love of God and the goodness of God and the holiness of God, but do we talk about the justice of God, the anger of God, the proper reverence and respect for God? In the Campbell home, there were two periods of worship every day. Here are the two descriptions. There was a morning service at 7 o'clock. In the morning, each permanent resident was supplied with a Bible, the lesson being from the Old Testament, and each one read 5 verses. And when the chapter was completed, he, being Alexander Campbell, proceeded to question each one, and when the subject therein treated was exhausted, he usually gave a learned and general and interesting elucidation of some of the principles in morals, history, and religion that were connected with the passage read. And then followed a hymn and then a prayer. Then at 8 o'clock each evening, and I love the language here, at 8 o'clock every evening a bell was rung and all the inmates of the house. I'm sure my children at time would relate to that. I'm sure as they've wanted to do things in times past and I refused, or my wife refused, or grounded them for some misbehavior, that they may have felt like inmates. But anyway, at 8 o'clock every evening a bell was rung and all the inmates of the house, including servants and visitors, promptly assembled in the large family room. When all were seated, Mr. Campbell himself would recite a verse of Scripture, and then all present in the order in which they were seated would do the same. Now, young men who were visiting the girls in the parlor, of whom there were always from 2 or 3 to 6 daughters, nieces, and cousins, but the young men who were visiting the girls in the parlor must come in with the rest and recite their verses. And many a one, being caught without a verse, would hurriedly beg one of the girls to give him one when the bell rang so as not to display his ignorance. After the recitation of verses, a chapter was read by Mr. Campbell and all kneeled in prayer. As I read that, I thought to myself, I wonder how many times some young man said, "Jesus wept," John 11:35. And then I also wondered if we put that into practice today, if it wouldn't greatly improve the quality of some of the young men and young women that show up at our doorsteps wanting to date our sons and our daughters. It's an interesting practice. But you know, when I read this, the thing that interested me was that it never seemed to be something that the family resented. Those who were writing about it and interviewing some of Campbell's descendants who remembered some of these things said it was always an enjoyable time. The lessons were always something that were interesting, and no one ever seemed to mind this time that they spent in devotion to God. But what does the Bible say about worshiping at home? The Bible doesn't say a lot specifically as far as worshiping at home, as far as laying out something that we must do or how it is to be done in that kind of a specific way. But there are certainly passages that teach that God and His Word must be an important part of our families. I want to read several. If you'd like to follow along, I'm going to begin in the book of Deuteronomy with chapter 4, beginning with verse 7. "For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us? For whatever reason we may call upon Him. And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I set before you this day? Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and your grandchildren. Teach them how great a nation and how fortunate the nation is to have a God that is so near, a God that we can call upon at any time, a God that has given us statutes and righteous judgments. Teach them to your children and to your grandchildren. A passage I'm sure you're familiar with in Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning with verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and your gates. Teach them diligently to your children. You go over to Deuteronomy chapter 32. And in Deuteronomy chapter 32, beginning with verse 45, again we hear this admonition. Moses finished speaking all these words to all Israel. And he said to them, set your hearts on all the words which I testify among you today, which you shall command your children to be careful to observe all the words of this law. For it is not a futile thing for you, because it is your life. And by this word you shall prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess. You see, it's not a futile thing. Your life is on the line here. Be sure that you remember these words, and be sure that you command your children to observe them as well. A passage in Psalm 78 that I think is a wonderful passage. The psalmist early on in verses 2 through 4 says, I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, telling to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he has done. Now jump over to verse 6 and following. That the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. Again, I'm going to be referring back to this because it has a lot to do with the lesson I'm presenting, but in Brother Dan Kessinger's lesson a while ago, he asked the question, is one of the reasons we're having problems over special music and instrumental music, is it because we have not continued to teach it? Is it not because we have failed to pass on the Lord's commands and the Lord's teaching? And this is what he's saying here. Don't hide it from your children. Tell it to the next generation, that the next generation to come will know them, that they may arise and declare them to their children, that they can set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. You come to the New Testament, of course, in Paul writing to Timothy. He remembers Timothy's upbringing. He thanks Timothy in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5 for the faith that first dwelt in his grandmother and then in his mother and now also in him. Then in 2 Timothy chapter 3, 14 and 15, but as for you, continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the holy scriptures which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. All of these passages imply that there was teaching at home and that they were instructed in the ways of God at home. I love the wording of Joshua 24 that you've heard so many times, where Joshua is preparing his farewell address or giving his farewell address. And he says, now therefore fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I can just imagine the uproar that many in the world today would have with a statement made like that. You see, how politically incorrect can you be? How dare Joshua to speak not only for himself, but for his wife and for his family? that I would to God that we had more men today who had the Christian conviction and the Christian courage to stand up and say, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And then do all that they can within their power and with the help of God to make that a reality. We will serve the Lord. There are examples, I believe, of family worship. You could go to Job 1, where Job is offering sacrifices for his children. You could go to Exodus chapter 12. The Passover is being instituted. It was to be observed by the various households in the land of Egypt. You go to Acts chapter 10 and Cornelius, who is described as a devout man and one who feared God with all of his household. And so while the Bible doesn't set out a specific plan as far as how worship in the home is to be conducted, certainly these passages indicate that God's word and praise unto God and things of that nature certainly are to be a part of our home environment. Let me just give you some reasons very briefly and some suggestions for home worship. I believe we ought to first engage in home worship because God commands us as parents to teach our children. We notice many passages, Ephesians 6 and verse 4, where fathers are admonished to bring their children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. So obviously it's a command of God that we pass on the teachings of Jesus Christ to our children. Second, I think we ought to engage in it because childhood is such a prime time for learning. Young children are so open-minded as far as their willingness to receive new truth and their desire to learn and their excitement at being able to learn something new and to be able to recite it back to you or to recite it to some other person in the house when they're asked to. It's a wonderful time to be able to teach because they are so receptive to learning. I believe it's important because I believe parents can lead their children in this way to a deep and abiding faith in Jesus Christ. You know, sometimes when we read the account of Noah and his working all of those years and building the ark and his being a preacher of righteousness, sometimes I think that we think in some ways Noah was a failure because no one listened to him. But he saved his family. And how fortunate and how glad I will feel if at the end of my life I can look back and believe that I was able to do the same. To know that my children and their children are going to be striving for that heavenly home. To know that we were able to save, through the teaching of the Word of God, our families. I believe we need to engage in worship at home because it teaches our children about self-discipline. It teaches them how to develop attitudes and lifestyles that are pleasing and acceptable to God and will help them to grow then to be mature and responsible men and women, leaders, workers in the Church of Jesus Christ. Here are some simple suggestions for home worship or home devotionals. Obviously, I think each family has to decide what time is best for their devotionals because especially in this day and age, with shift work and the different activities that go on, many times you just couldn't say, well, this is the best time to do this kind of thing. But try to make it a time, obviously, when everyone can be present. Many times early in the morning at breakfast or sometimes right before children go to bed is a wonderful time to talk about the things of God, to sing or to read from the Word of God. They don't need to be long and tedious. As I was thinking about the Campbell worship periods, two times a day in his house, how long would it take to read a chapter of the Bible, ask a few questions, sing a song, and have a prayer? How long would it take to gather all the people, all the inmates together, and have them recite a verse? Read a chapter, sing a song, and have a prayer. We're not talking about long, drawn-out, tedious things, but just times when we pause to reflect on God and the things of God. I think we need to keep in mind the whole family, try to adapt our devotions to accommodate all ages within the family as much as possible, try to make it possible for all to participate, whether it be reading or quoting a memory verse or just talking about something that they want to know about. And certainly our devotions would include prayer. They would include reading, whether it be reading from the Bible, maybe depending on the age of your children, from a Bible story book, maybe reading a religious article, maybe reading a religious publication. You know, I know West Virginia Christian often has things for all ages, and I know it's going to be doing more of that. At least that's my understanding. Going to try to have articles from teenagers in the area. And there are publications designed especially for young people and teenagers that you can subscribe to that would be wonderful material to be used in this kind of a setting. Certainly, it could include singing. What a great power there is in singing. I don't guess I'll ever lose the picture of my wife from the time our children were born. The moment, you know, that we brought them home and she would rock them and sing hymns to them. From the time they were old enough to begin to hear, you see. They were hearing songs about Jesus Christ. Songs about God and the love of God. There's great power in singing. A man once said, "Let me write the songs of a nation. I care not who writes his laws." We need to take advantage of singing good gospel songs together as families. Now let me state here something, though, that I think presses upon a lot of us at times. Because, brethren, I realize from my own experience that many times as families we begin to feel extremely guilty if we cannot maintain some type of a regular devotional period each and every day. And I know within our household that worked pretty well for our family as long as our children were young. Before they were in school and maybe up through about the sixth grade, that worked pretty well. But I know when my children got into junior high school and then moved on into high school, they became involved in different activities, sporting events, the band, singing groups, different clubs and things of that nature. You add to that the schoolwork that they would bring home every evening. At least my daughter, my son, chose not to do that much. But the schoolwork that they would bring home. And it can become increasingly hard to maintain regular devotionals. But as parents, let's learn to take advantage of what some have called a teachable moments. Teachable moments. For example, can you imagine when the Passover was being established in Exodus chapter 12? Can you imagine some of the children in the household seeing the lamb that was slain and seeing the blood being put over the doorpost and wondering why? That had to elicit questions from young minds. Why would Daddy be doing that? Why would he be putting blood over the doorpost? And then the father would have a chance to explain how God was going to deliver his people out of bondage. How God was going to pass through the land and that every house that did not have that blood over the doorposts would suffer the death of the firstborn. That God was a God of salvation and he was going to deliver his people. In Joshua chapter 4, a command was given that again would bring about this kind of teaching and learning situation. In Joshua chapter 4, beginning with verse 4, then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the children of Israel, one man from every tribe. And Joshua said to them, "Cross over before the ark of the Lord, your God, into the midst of the Jordan, and each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, 'What do these stones mean to you?' And then you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be a memorial to the children of Israel forever." You see, a teaching moment. They would see these stones and they would ask this question. And then they would be taught about God and about, again, his salvation and his deliverance and his care. You know how many times you've heard the story, I'm sure, and probably witnessed it a few times. Someone is baptized. And the little child wanted his parents to take him up and show him the baptistry, so they take him up and they hold him up so he can see in the water, and he says, "Where's the sins?" You know, "I want to know where the sins are at." He heard him say the sins are going to be washed away, so he's looking in the water, wants to know where the sins are at. What a wonderful teaching moment to teach a child what has taken place. How many children have expressed curiosity over the Lord's Supper? You know, what is this? This bread and this little cup we drink out, what's it mean? That's a teaching moment. How about just lessons from nature? When you see a rainbow, isn't that a wonderful moment to teach your children about God? About the promise he made to Noah? How about someone planting a garden and you talk about the parable of the sower? How about the ants? Writer of Proverbs had a lot to say about ants. How about eagles? You see, there's so many lessons that we can just teach without it having to be a set-down, formal situation that sometimes our kids come to kind of detest. How about just incidents in their daily lives? How about when our children come home and they talk about how someone mistreated them at school? And you'd find out how they reacted. And maybe if they reacted appropriately, you can tell them, you know, you just practiced the golden rule today. You treated them like you would want to be treated and rather than the way they treated you. Or how about if they're having trouble with a teacher? or someone who's in a position of authority, and you begin to teach them what God says about those in authority and how we're to respect not only our parents, but others who are in positions of authority. There are just so many instances like that where we have opportunities to teach. How about when you travel? Now, my family loves to sing. If you're around my family much, my wife and my son and my daughter love to sing. And we do that a lot in the car. Sometimes we'll put in a tape of a cappella gospel music and sing along with the tape. Sometimes we sing by ourselves. But what a wonderful opportunity to worship together. And you could go on with so many things. How about just discussing what they learned in Bible class? Do you ever think about that as parents when they come home? You know, what did you learn in Bible class today when you're sitting around for your Sunday afternoon meal? Campbell required his children to answer questions about his sermons when they came home. I'm always afraid to ask my children questions about my sermons. I'm afraid they'll honestly tell me what they thought. So, you know, we need to find time because, again, many times it becomes increasingly difficult as our children grow older to maintain those regular devotional periods that maybe we were able to do when they were younger. But even if we're not able to do that as much as we would like, let's take advantage of these teachable moments where we can instill within them a deeper appreciation for God and the things of God. Now let me also suggest, however, under this topic of a godly worship in our homes, that I think something else that is vitally important is that we have a home that maintains what I'm going to call an atmosphere of worship. You know, brethren, we're really kidding ourselves if we don't believe that our children very early in life come to appreciate what our priorities are. We're kidding ourselves if we think they don't understand that and don't recognize that. They are soon going to know if we are genuinely sincere about our faith and about our religion. And so we must put God first. In fact, with God, it's either first or no place. And the home is the best place for proper priorities to be written on the tender hearts of our children. Our children need to hear us pray. Our children need to see us read and study and talk about the Word of God. You know, if parents, if we believe that the Bible is of divine origin, and if we are aware of the power of the Bible to mold and shape lives into the image of God and of His Son, Jesus Christ, then certainly we want to create an environment in our home where the Bible is respected, where the Bible is honored and loved. And not that the Bible is just a book that sits on a shelf that we pull out occasionally, especially if the preacher or one of the elders shows up. Parents, you ought to back the church at home, impressing upon your children that the church is the blood-bought body of Jesus Christ, the spiritual body of Jesus Christ. And they ought to know that it's a body through which the message of life is being proclaimed. And certainly our home should not be a place that when we gather around our tables Sunday afternoon to enjoy a meal together, that we begin to criticize, run down, condemn virtually everyone and everything that happens on Sunday morning. What a destructive atmosphere that creates within the home. The home should be a place where the church is prayed for, where leaders in the church are prayed for, where members who are struggling and need our prayers are prayed for. We need to have an atmosphere of worship in the home. How about our communication at home? I read just the other day that the average person speaks about 4,800 words a day. A lot of those are spoken at home. But think about the words that are exchanged between a husband and a wife, between parents and children, between brothers and sisters, between family and guests. Are they too often words of anger, destructive words, profane words, or are they words of kindness, words of encouragement, inspirational words, pure words? You know, it was said of the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. No wonder her children rise up and call her blessed. No wonder her husband praises her, because her mouth opened with wisdom, and on her tongue was the law of kindness. I know, brethren, it's hard sometimes. Sometimes days just don't go well at all. And so I'm sure that there are some Sunday mornings when we get up and one or the other of the husband or wife's not feeling good, and before long we're having sharp words with each other, and maybe the children aren't cooperating, so we're screaming at our kids. We finally get them all piled into the car, and we drive to church, and we jump out, and we put a big smile on and say, "Oh, boy, it's great to be here." I know that has to happen occasionally to all of us, but surely it shouldn't be something that happens on a regular basis. Our homes ought to be places where there's an atmosphere where worship can be understood, where worship can be appreciated, and where our families won't think that we're hypocrites by praying or by reading the Bible or by singing songs, because they see in our daily lives something that's completely contrary to all of that. You see, what type of spiritual environment do our children and others see in our homes? Are our homes spiritually minded? And are our homes Bible and Christ-centered? Do they see us expressing thanks at mealtime? And is that such a common practice that our children wait for thanks to be expressed before they begin to eat? Or is that just something, again, that we do when certain people show up at the house? How long would someone have to stay in our home before they heard a prayer offered or before they saw the Bible being read? What do our children expect to happen Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday evening? I don't say this as a way of bragging. I don't mean that at all. But you know something my children have never asked me? My daughter's 20, my son's 18. You know something they've never asked me? They've never got up on Sunday morning and say, "Dad, what are we going to do today?" They don't come in on Sunday afternoon and say, "Dad, are we going to church tonight?" They don't ask me that on Wednesday night. They don't ask that. They know. That's just a part of our life. That's just an understood thing in our household, that we're going to be at the Lord's house. We're going to be there Sunday morning and Sunday night or Wednesday. If it's a gospel meeting, they don't ask, "Are we going to go every night?" or if it's vacation Bible school. See, it's an environment where worship is expected and accepted and understood. And you see the point. If we're not working hard at maintaining a Christian environment in our home, then our children are not going to be interested in public or private worship, because they'll think it's hypocritical. They'll think it's a joke. Just this past week, I was in a gospel meeting. A young man that I've known since he was born moved away from Berwickville, and I happen to be where he's now living. 17 years old, he's not attending like he should. I took him out for supper one evening. I didn't have any other appointments, so I said, "Why don't you go out with me?" And we went out and had a really wonderful time together and just talked about his life and what he's planning to do and a lot of things. And then finally, I asked him, I said, "How are things with you and the church?" And he didn't even hesitate. He said, "Steve, I'm not attending like I should." "Why not?" "Oh, things are just lousy at home. Mom and Dad fight all the time. Me and my brother fight all the time. I just don't feel like going." Now, that may be an excuse. Sure, it's an excuse. It may not even be true. That may be his way of trying to justify what he's doing in my sight. I hope it's not true. But if it is, isn't that sad? That a young man can be so discouraged by what he sees as inconsistency and things that are unchristlike in his home that he's really lost interest in things that should be causing him to become more Christ-like. And finally, brethren, the home also should have such an environment that it reinforces what the church teaches about morality and also about worship. Again, Dan very powerfully touched on this. But it seems to me that we're really confusing our young people today by trying to teach two different standards, as Dan pointed out. By trying to teach that when we worship here, there's one standard. When we worship somewhere else, there's another standard. And then we act like we're not understanding why they're not happy or why they're wanting to bring these changes over to here. Why can we not in our homes just reinforce and consistently teach what the Bible teaches about worship, so that we don't have this kind of confusion and these kinds of problems? You know, one of the things that I admire about brethren in India, and I don't know if Skip was with me. Skip and I have gone a couple of times together. I'm not sure if he was with me on this occasion, but somehow in our discussion with two or three of our translators, Indian preachers, we got to talking about playing musical instruments, maybe about our children playing the piano or the guitar. And a couple of the Indian brethren, who are brothers, literally said, "We play." And we said, "Oh, that's great. We'd like to hear you." And they acted like they were shocked. And they said, "Oh, no, brother, we don't play anymore." And we said, "No, we're not talking about religious music. We just like to hear you play some kind of secular music." They said, "Oh, no, brother. In this country, people couldn't understand the difference. If we say that we don't use instruments in worship, and then they see us using instruments for our enjoyment, they don't understand, and it confuses them, so we don't do it at all." Now, brethren, I'm not saying that's necessary. I'm just saying I love that spirit. I love that attitude. And I love that desire to not do anything that would cause confusion in people you're trying to lead to Jesus Christ.
And yet sometimes in our very homes we do the same thing. We create confusion by teaching one standard for the church and another standard almost for our homes. I heard a father talk about taking his family camping. And they were in an area where the church was they could have driven to in a short time. But he said, no, we don't go, when we go on these trips, we don't go to this congregation to worship because we like to have our own worship service. And he said, we don't do things traditionally. And when we do this, I let my daughters lead the singing, and I let my daughters lead the prayer, and I let my daughters read the scriptures or say something. And he said, we just have a non-traditional type of worship. Well, that's not a matter of tradition. It's a matter of scripture. It's not a matter of whether or not we're doing something in a non-traditional way. It's a question of whether or not we're doing something in a biblical way. And what's going to happen as his children continue to grow older? They're going to wonder why, you see, they can't do that in public at other places. Why it's just when they're out on their camping trips together. The home should be a place where worship and the worship of the church is reinforced. Brethren, it takes time, lots of time, every day, for our families to be what God would have them to be. We have our children for such a short time. I remember as clearly as if it were yesterday watching my son, because where I live, the school was right next door. And so he just walked out our back door and right across the parking lot to the school. And I remember him watching him in the first grade or kindergarten, all dressed up, walking over by himself. He wanted to go by himself to kindergarten, and thinking to myself, man, he's got such a long time to go to school. You know, he's got 13 years in front of him to go to school. Last May, I watched him walk across the stage and receive his diploma. Doesn't seem possible to me. We have them for such a short time, 17, 18 years maybe, before they go off to school somewhere else. And other activities take up a lot of the last 4 or 5 as they become involved in so many things outside of the home. We need to be doing all that we can to help ensure that our children will have bright futures, that our children will live lives that one day will take them to heaven. We can't leave this up to the church. We can't leave this up to Bible class teachers, to preachers, to elders. It must begin at home. Allow the church and the Bible classes and the preachers and the elders to reinforce it, but it must begin at home, and our home must be places where God and His Word are present at all times. I wish we could sing the song, but in closing, let me just say, as the song so beautifully states, God give us Christian homes. Thank you.